Okay, so now we have the recorder on, so we can check the levels. This could be like a little pre-show.
I'm testing.
Yeah, you see, try your levels and see where you go.
Hello. 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 My name is Jessica. It's not showing like big blue dots like you have.
Well, yeah, I mean, see, my voice registers a lot heavier on it. You might have to vocalize a little bit to be more audible.
Okay.
Thanks, sweetie. And then I'm gonna shut up a little bit. Okay. So we're gonna. Do you want to do the technology part first, or should I do the talking part first?
Whatever you want, babe.
Or I'll just do a politics first, because those are the order, like, politics, media, and then, whatever, then I'll go. Alright, we'll shoot to start at that 1:30 mark, and yeah, I'll be quieter, he'll be vocalizing, and we'll be cool. Hi, you're listening to the PacificPelican.us podcast with me, Daniel J. McKeown. This episode is number 3, recorded on July 28th, 2010. And my guest today is the beautiful Jessica McKeown. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you, Dan. I'm very excited to be on the PacificPelican.us podcast.
Well, that's awesome. So let me see here. I think I wanted to just cover a handful of different things, going from politics to media to technology, and including the talk about the 2010 election coming up in the U.S. For Congress. Discuss the Arizona immigration law, also the WikiLeaks and Afghanistan. Controversy, and as well, we'll do a tech roundup including Firefox and discussion of Aperture and alternatives to that. So I want to say the 2010 election is coming up, and I think that there's talk out there that not only could the House go to the Republicans, but they could possibly take over the Senate, but that's seen as less likely. And one of the reasons I think Barack Obama and probably subsequently Democrats have lost popularity is because a lot of liberals think that he's turned his back on them. There have been a lot of issues. We really could talk all day about them, but it includes his economic policy. I know he has people like Tim Geithner and Lawrence Summers. It includes that he didn't go very far on health reform, including no public option. The fact that he's escalated the Afghan war, I think that a lot of liberals feel betrayed. The fact that he folded on the oil drilling issue before, and then the BP disaster happened, I think that really hurt him with his base, and liberals were his base. So where do we stand on Obama, just really quick, 2012. Does he look viable as for re-election?
No. Unfortunately, like all politicians, he's all talk. He talked his way into the office and pretty much, you know, led a lot of liberal people to believe he was the one. He was really going to make a difference. This time it's going to be different, and he's really going to do some, you know, really make some big changes. And he got into office and pretty much turned into every other president, taking deals, not thinking about the people. And when he goes and talks, it's the same campaign speech over and over and over again.
Campaign still.
And it's like when he was campaigning, it was great. Now he's our president, and he's still talking to us like he has to convince us. Because he hasn't really done anything.
Not
Instead
enough,
of really
I guess.
Talking to us and saying, hey, this is what I've done, this is why I'm doing it. He's just, he keeps going on with the campaign rhetoric and that certain style of speaking, which works, I think, great for a campaign. But once you're in office, you're in command. You're in charge. Tell us what's going on. And
it's hard.
It's still.
It's hard for me. It's still, sorry?
It's just, it's still, you know, it still has that campaign feel.
I agree. It's hard for me to disagree with the word you've said. I think you've pretty much got it on Obama, and he does look like possibly in danger of losing in 2012. But then in 2010, just in November, we have coming up the congressional elections, and I've got to say, like, there's people, you know, just in our own state that we live in now, Ohio, Ted Strickland, a very moderate Democrat, is going up against a dude who used to substitute for Bill O'Reilly. I mean, you know, that dude might win. It's pretty out there how there's a lot of right wing candidates, you know, and they may take over, and that concerns me. As much as I will absolutely complain about Obama, I start thinking about how Republicans, not only will they bring back the Bush policies, they're openly campaigning on it.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, living in America for 31 years and, you know, being aware of politics for a few of those, it's just the lesser of two evils. That's what it feels like. Every time I go to the voting poll.
You've lived in California, and you've lived in Nevada, and you've lived in Ohio, and you've lived all your years in America, like you said, and it really seems like it is a two-party duopoly across the country. It really seems like, you know, we're just dealing with, you know, people that are, you know, questionable. And then again, you know, I do certainly think that it's worse off when Republicans are in charge.
For sure. And I think the question just is, you know, is who's going to screw me over less? You know,
that's a pretty terrible thing to calculate. But I understand your point. Before we start talking about a revolution here, I think we should also talk about the Arizona immigration law. Parts of that were struck down, including the idea that if you stop someone, you should check their immigration status based on quote-unquote reasonable suspicion. There is an injunction issued by a federal court stopping that from being enforced, although it's going to be appealed, and we'll see what happens in the end. But what do you think about that? Do you think it's good that at least that was struck down about it?
I do. I just want to also note that people in politics and people in government are the ones that came up with that stupid law. This is what they do all day. They sit around and they come up with stupid laws
to
oppress us.
Well, and is Arizona, I mean, that's a Republican-run state. I just want to throw that out there. I mean, when we're talking about, you know, the election coming up. And I am partisan. I don't mean to be, I mean to say I'm a big Democratic supporter. But, yeah, I think you got to watch out, like, when there's Republicans in charge. It's, you know, you get these really crazy laws that are definitely beyond the pale. I mean, they're getting into a federal area that isn't their job. And they need to just back off. You know, that's what I would say to Arizona. But, you know, unfortunately, I don't have any plans to go there anytime soon.
Well, I just, you know, Republicans do not care about you unless you are very rich. And the reason, their biggest thing, I think, that Republicans always talk about is taxes, right? And there was a really good point we were watching earlier. You might have it in your notes, but, you know, this guy that's running for the office here in Ohio for the governor, he wants to cut all these taxes. And
John Kasich,
yeah, and that's what runs the city, and that's what supports it. Like, I'm really sorry to tell people this, but how do you think streets get paved? And how do you think your mail gets delivered? Somebody has to pay for it. Right now, if they cut taxes, the people who are making the most money, the rich people, they're getting off scot-free.
You know what? I want to tell people that if they want to live in Pakistan, I mean, that's a libertarian country. That's what I think of as a libertarian country. Be like, no paved roads, everyone's armed to the teeth, and it sucks. That's extreme libertarianism. I mean, I think that there's so many of these self-righteous Tea Party, you know, morons out there like Rand Paul talking about, you know, all this talk about states' rights from all these other crazy Republicans. I just don't even know what to make of it sometimes. That, you know, it seems like it's really out of hand, and you know, I mean, but I don't relate to it. It's not the political culture I relate to. So, you know, there's you know, the other followers.
Yeah, but I mean, the other thing is, you know, again, just going back to this argument that Republicans use all the time. So, okay, we cut the taxes, right? Putting more money in your pocket so you can go spend it. So they assume that, what, you're going to go down to the local, you know, mom and pop store and spend it. But most likely what's going to happen is people are going to spend it on foreign companies.
Most people
don't
pay federal income tax. Only like 60% of people pay federal income tax. So they're talking about federal, you know, often they're talking about tax cuts that don't affect the lowest 40% of wage earners. And, you know, they mostly affect only the top, like, 1 or 2% of wage earners. You know, it's a fundamentally dishonest argument when they try to say that, like, they're cutting small, you know, they're cutting taxes for small businesses. They're cutting taxes, you know, for large businesses, very large businesses owned by, like, a few people, or you know, they're always trying to cut corporate taxes. You know, they're definitely the policies, you know, they're in for the super rich. And you don't have to look far for signs of or signs of a panic about a shrinking middle class in this country. And it's probably a little more than just an old cliche that people have been saying for a long time, the middle class is shrinking. And I think that there's a lot of real concern about that, just normal mid-level jobs and the idea that it might be worth it for middle-class kids to borrow their way through, like, a private college. I don't know if you can really make that argument rationally right now. Another story that's important is WikiLeaks, and this does go into politics, but it also goes into media. They released a lot of documents from the Afghan war, military dispatches, and they reveal information about massacres and tactics and it's a very very large amount of data, and I don't know what's in it other than, you know, the headlines that I've read and the excerpts, but I do think that it's of course a devastating picture of a brutal war that's pointless, and that, you know, this is just maybe one more thing it's going to take, you know. I don't know how many things it's going to take to get us out of there. And that's how I feel about it. But, I mean, don't you want us to withdraw too, I guess. So we're not going to argue about that.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, maybe 50 years ago, America, quote, couldn't handle this kind of information. But I think in an age of Facebook and Twitter and Foursquare and this big movement in the media world, especially with companies for transparency, I think a lot more of the American people are going to demand transparency from their government, and especially about the war. And right now it's very easy for them to say, oh, we can't tell you because then our enemies would find out and blah, 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 blah. You know, you can find a way to do it, to be transparent and to let us know what's really going on there.
The problem is, you know, they're killing civilians. They're committing acts of brutal war criminality, and this is not the kind of thing that'll survive coming to the light of day in today's age. It's one thing, you know, there's too many, you know, there's too much concern about it. I mean, why else did the U.S. refuse to get involved in the International Criminal Court? I mean, there's a lot of paranoia about this, about, you know, international legal ramifications. You know, Nick Clegg, that fairly dim-witted, out of his depth fellow who is the head of the Liberal Democrats in Britain and a coalition partner to Prime Minister David Cameron, was sitting at the podium for the government and admitted the Iraq War was illegal. You know, now they're concerned that there could be international criminal court cases against them. They're a signatory. And there should be. You know, I think that this is something, though, that we're looking at, like, WikiLeaks is, you know, that is being hunted down, at least in the person of Julian Assange. The federal agents are you know, looking around for him, and he's basically saying he's not going to come back to the U.S. anytime soon. You know, he's an Australian citizen, but, you know, I guess he was in London last time I saw him being interviewed. So yeah, I think this is just a fascinating story from the media angle and from the war angle. But I just wonder how I've kind of written about how, you know, I don't know what it's going to take for Obama to just get it, just to get out of Afghanistan. And I do think there's a lot of suspicion that the army is making money off of the opium trade. I don't want to go into any more detail about that. I think a lot of people know that there's a lot of, you know, messed up stuff going on in Afghanistan. The sooner, you know, we get out, the better, because you know, we're paying contractors who then pay the Taliban not to attack the U.S. So it becomes a temporary reprieve where we just let the enemy keep, you know, corruptly sifting from our from our till. It's an unbelievable, you know, boondoggle, and it's really because of the contractors and the opium trade. You know, it's really out of hand. It's shameful. Obama's, you know, gotten himself in like that. I guess that's about it for the politics, and we can talk about the tech stuff now. Firefox 4 Beta 2 is available. There's, you know, a new version of Firefox 4. I don't know if it's going to be the leading browser anymore. I'm a little concerned. Main reason is personal. Pacific Pelican.us, it now has persistent underlines under all the links, at least the current theme I have on there, the key theme. It looks like it does on Safari now. So whatever they did, it doesn't look like Chrome anymore. It looks like Safari, where things are always underlined instead of only when they haven't been clicked on. So not that happy about that, but I'm not saying my CSS isn't suspect. But I think the interface, it's hard to tell because I use a Mac mainly, and those, really the interface on everything is the same on those, at least the way it looks to me. Speaking of Macs though, photo management is something I want to talk about briefly. I use Aperture. Jessica and I have started using Aperture. What do you think of it?
I like it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty neat, and it's, you know, it's good. It takes our RAWs, and we start shooting in RAW with our Nikon D5000. We've been, you know, using that and taking good pictures with that. Jessica is a great artist with the camera, so we've gotten a lot of good ones, and you know, we've taken a lot of nice shots of different events. So, you know, and the thing that I really like about Aperture is that it does give you a good interface for managing your photos, and you can export them, and you know, it manages most of the videos our cameras generate. The thing is though, it is proprietary software, and so I don't love that, you know, that I'm using proprietary software when I have a good alternative. But when there's no good alternative, I mean, you know, you gotta get, you know, what you wanna get done. So I didn't really think, I tried a couple managers on Ubuntu. F-Spot and Shotwell, and at least a few months ago when I tried them, they were definitely inadequate, and I think they're designed in a way that I think people would call simple, I would call simplistic. You know, you need some options, you need some power user options, and I recently noticed Digicam. That's kind of neat looking. I've been just playing with it, but I still don't think that even that or any other free alternative is quite at the level of Aperture or its other paid competitor. You know, Aperture is from Apple, and Lightroom is from Adobe. And we got Aperture 3, which I guess is fairly new. And I really like using that. But I'm hoping, you know, it really makes me wonder if I might be able to either contribute to an open source one, or eventually, or work on, you know, some tools myself, you know, that do have, you know, photo management capabilities. I know podcasts that I like, Linux Outlaws, they mentioned the idea of people doing that. But, you know, I think it would be, when you really get down to it, graphics, they're so complex, they're so convoluted, that it's one of those areas that I would love to see some progress in, you know, for a good photo management software, you know, in open source and free software. But I don't know, because right now, I wonder, you know, I hope it's not more in the category of video editing, where I don't see a competitive alternative that's truly competitive with Adobe Premiere, you know, anytime soon in video editing and free software.
Yeah, I mean, photo management, you know, is only going to become more and more important as digital cameras become less expensive and more people start to get better and better cameras.
Right.
And you just, you know, it's really good to have free options. I mean, the people who create free software are, you know, true digital artists, and they are truly, you know, sharing
well,
their gift.
That's true. I agree, and I hope that we can find people to design a. I want a great interface, because I think, you know, there are raw converters, there are tools, there's, you know, GIMP and other programs like, you know, GNU image manipulation program and other tools like that are very flexible, and I think a lot of pieces can be bolted on, you know, in the right, you know, design, but I do think that it would have to be a good user interface. I actually think I saw a little, you know, article about Lightroom, and I got to admit, I'm glad we have Aperture, because I think it's a little better user interface, and I think that's such a big deal with these tools. It's got to have a solid backend, but the Linux, you know, the Linux world does have some solid backend tools for almost everything or everything, but somebody's got to design a sensational user interface, and they could do it with, you know, the tools that are on Linux, like GTK or Qt or one of those, you know, frameworks. It doesn't have to be in Cocoa on Apple, but it's got to be a good designer, you know. So that's
yeah.
what I'm looking at.
User interface is, I think, going to become more and more important. And I think it's going to be one of the attributes that can really set companies, programs, software apart from the rest.
Sure. There's a lot of back-end solutions have been designed. A lot of stuff's been built. But you got to let people of all ability levels interact with your software and want to buy it or want to buy the hardware that comes with it or the services that come with it, whatever your business model is. So, yeah, I mean, great. I thought maybe we'd finish up with a little bit of discussion about the new Apple hardware. Of course, I don't think either of us have tried it yet, but there's that new so-called Magic Trackpad from Apple, and it does look kind of interesting. I personally think that it might be just another interesting tool. Like, I would probably continue to use a mouse. I do use the Magic Mouse right now, you know, on our iMac, but and that, you know, I like that fine. It's actually much better than its predecessor that was wired that came with the iMac before. And I do like it, but I do think that I might want one of those Magic Trackpads just as an extra tool for certain things, but I don't think I would use it every day. What do you think?
I think it's a total waste.
Yeah. Okay.
It's $70 for a big ass mouse. And had they built in capabilities where you could use, you know, a drawing pen on it or something else, I would be all for it. But why do I want this big, huge thing on my desktop to take up more space? Why isn't the mouse enough? I mean, I get the whole zoom, pinch, whatever thing. I guess I'm just not as into that as other people.
Well, $70 for a big-ass mouse, that's definitely what I think I want to call the episode. But I think someone at Logitech might be listening saying, we built a pretty successful company on that idea. but I'm just kidding. Okay, well, thanks so much for providing some great ideas to the podcast, and we're going to just say thanks for listening to the Pacific Pelican US Podcast 3, and you can check out, you know, more information about me at pacificpelican.us, and you can find Jessica at jessica.sf3am.com.
That's right.